Hello and welcome to this special episode of the podcast. I'm calling Chess Pieces as we dissect the play A Game at Chess by Thomas Middleton, and specifically looking at adapting the text for the podcast, for a full cast audio adaptation, but also further down the line looking at a cut down, simplified stage version, and also thinking about some of the explicatory issues for doing a full-on production. Doing a full-on production is not something in the short term we're able to do because it requires a massive cast. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to build more interest in the play. We're trying to build something that people can engage with, an adaptation that anyone can access on the podcast, as well as simplified best bits of plays that we can easily stage with a few actors and essentially proselytize why we like this play. And as I say, build up an audience large enough to come and see it, because there's no point doing a play if nobody comes. Especially if you spent rather a lot of money on it. Reading today, we're going to read through Act 1 and we're going to look at options. There are various things in the first episode we covered, various problems of the play about explaining who is who, especially in an audio medium. We're sort of looking for good names or titles we can give characters. The character names are not very helpful for an audio medium, or other ways to give the audience a chance to hang their hat. We are looking at an additional using additional narration and additional chess terms and stuff, as well as a certain amount of accent work that we might play around with as well. But that was all in episode one, which is available on the podcast now. Most of the people in this room, in fact all of the people in this room, were not privy to that first session, so they're all coming into this act completely cold, apart from a brief exposition of what the hell is going on. So to read and work around Act 1, first up we have...
Hello, my name is Lynn Freitas. I live in the northwestern United States.
Second up we have...
Hello, I'm Emma Kemp. I'm an actor and I'm here in London.
Third up we have... Ooh, no sound. No sound from Helen. She's not muted, but we cannot hear her. Ooh, technical problems.
All right, I've changed microphone.
Ah, we can hear you.
Better.
Okay, it's my microphone. It's a microphone error. Is this quality okay?
Just about. Your sound level is a little quieter, but you're clear enough.
Thank you. My name is Helen Good. I'm a historian, and I'm living in Hull.
And fourth up is...
Alan Scott, already confused, in Suffolk.
And fifth up is...
Hi, I'm Eric and I can mumble.
And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. And yes, I'm number six in this scenario, I suppose. The reason why I keep we've just referred to everyone by numbers is the play is quite difficult to read because everybody has nobody has really given names. They have chess pieces. And so it's incredibly difficult to read off the script who anyone is at any one moment in time. And that is also a problem for audio as well. If we want to refer to anyone, most people have quite long names like Black Bishop's Pawn, which is a little difficult to hang your hat onto. So we are hunting for alternative names and things to come up. In the previous session, we did read the first half of Act 1. We're going to read the first half of Act 1 again, but only in passing. So that everyone in the room gets up to speed. I might edit this out of the final recording. I don't know yet. And then we'll go into the second half where once we are up to speed and maybe go over that a few times. So without further ado, I'm going to ask 1, 2, and 3 to step up to the Occhi and open the play. So we have the Black Queen's Pawn is going to be trying to tempt the White Queen's Pawn over to a different confession. We've had a prologue, we've had an induction, and we have this action occurring. And we'll just read this through until I tell everyone to stop.
I never see that face, but my pity rises when I behold so clear a masterpiece of heaven's art wrought out of dust and ashes, and at next thought to give her lost eternally. In being not ours, but the daughter of heresy, my soul bleeds at mine eyes.
Where should truth speak, if not in such a sorrow? their tears plainly. Beshrew me if she weep not heartily. What is my peace to her to take such pains in? If I wander to loss and with broad eyes, yet miss the path she can run blindfold in, through often exercise, why should my oversight, though in the best game that e'er Christian lost, raise the least spring of pity in her eyes? It's doubtless a great charity, and no virtue could win me surer.
Blessed things prevail with it. If ever goodness made a gracious promise, it is in yonder book. What little pains would build a fort for virtue to all memory in that sweet creature, where were the groundwork firmer?
It had been all my glory to be firm in what I have professed.
That is the enemy that steals your strength away and fights against you, disarms your soul, even in the heat of battle. Your firmness that way makes you more infirm for the right Christian conflict. There I spied a jealous, primitive sparkle, but now flew from your devoted eye, able to blow up all the heresies that ever sat in council with your spirit.
Enter the Black Bishop's Pawn.
And here comes he whose sanctimonious breath will make that spark of flame. List to him, virgin, at whose entrance princes will fall prostrate. Women are weaker vessels.
By my penitence, a comely presentation, and the habits to admiration reverend.
But the heart, lady, so meek that as you see good charity pictured still with young ones in her arms, so will he cherish all his young, tractable, sweet, obedient daughters, even in his bosom, in his own dear bosom. I am myself a secular Jesuitess, as many ladies are of worth and greatness. A second sort are Jesuits in voto, giving their vow unto the Father General. That's the Black Bishop of our house, whose pawn this gentleman now stands for, to receive the college habit of his holy pleasure.
But how are those in voto employed, lady, till they receive the habit?
They're not idle. He finds them all true laborers in the work of the universal monarchy, which he and his disciples principally aim at. Those are maintained in many courts and palaces, and are induced by noble personages into great princes' service, and prove some counselors of state, some secretaries, all serving in notes of intelligence as parish clerks in their mortuary bills to the Father General. So our designs oft time prevented and important secrets of state discovered, yet no author found, but they suspected oft that are most sound. The mystery is too deep yet for your entrance, and I offend to set your zeal so back. Checked by obedience with desire to hasten your progress to perfection, I commit you to the great worker's hands, to whose grave worth I fit my reverence, as to you my wishes.
Dost find her supple?
There's a little passage made.
At which point exit the Black Queen's Pawn.
Let me contemplate with holy wonder, season my access, and by degrees approach the sanctuary of unmatched beauty. Set in grace and goodness amongst the daughters of men, I have not found a more catholical aspect. That eye doth promise single life and meek obedience. Upon those lips, the sweet fresh buds of youth, the holy dew of prayer lies like a pearl dropped from the opening eyelids of the morn upon the bashful rose. How beauteously a gentle fast, not rigorously imposed, would look upon that cheek, and how delightfully the courteous physic of a tender penance, whose utmost cruelty should not exceed the first fear of a bride, to beat down frailty, would work to sound health your long-festered judgment, and make your merit, which though erring ignorance, appears but spotted righteousness to me, far clearer than the innocence of infants.
To that good work I bow, and will become obedience's humblest daughter, since I find the assistance of a sacred strength to aid me. The labour is as easy to serve virtue the right way, since 'tis she I ever served in my desire, though I transgressed in judgment.
That's easily absolved among the rest. You shall not find the virtue that you serve now a sharp and cruel mistress. Her ear is open to all your supplications. You may boldly and safely let in the most secret sin into her knowledge, which, like vanished man, never returns into the world again. Fate locks not up more trulier.
To the guilty, that may appear some benefit.
Who's so innocent that never stands in need on't in some kind? If every thought were blabbed that so confessed, the very air we breathe would be unblessed. Now to the work indeed, which is to catch her inclination. That's the special use we make of all our practice in all kingdoms. For by discovering their most secret frailties, things which once ours they must not hide from us, that's the first article of the creed we teach them, finding to what point their blood most inclines, know best to adapt them then to our designs. Daughter, the sooner you dispense your errors, the sooner you make haste to your recovery. You must part with them. To be nice or modest towards this good action is to imitate the bashfulness of one conceals an ulcer. For the uncomely parts the tumour vexes till it be past cure. Resolve you thus far, lady. The privatest thoughts that runs to hide itself into the most secret corner of your heart now must be of my acquaintance so familiarly, never she friend of your night counsels nearer.
I stand not much in fear of any action, guilty of that black time, most noble holiness. I must confess, as in a sacred temple, thronged with or auditory, some come rather to feed on human object than to taste of angels' food. So in the congregation of quick thoughts, which are more infinite than such assemblies, I cannot with truth's safety speak for all. Some have been wanderers, some fond, some sinful, but those found ever but poor entertainment. They had small encouragement to come again. The single life, which strongly I profess now, heaven pardon me, I was about to part from.
Then you have passed through love?
But left no stain in all my passage, sir, no print of wrong, for the most chaste maid that may trace my footsteps.
How came you off so clear?
I was discharged by an inhuman accident, which modesty forbids me to put any language to.
How you forget yourself. All actions, clad in their proper language, though most sordid, my ear is bound by duty to let in and lock up everlastingly. Shall I help you? He was not found to answer his creation. A vestal virgin in a slip of grace could not deliver man's loss modestlier. 'Twas the white bishop's pawn.
The same, blessed sir.
An heretic, well pickled.
By base treachery and violence prepared by his competitor, the black knight's pawn, whom I shall ever hate for it.
'Twas of revenges the unmanliest way that ever rival took. A villainy that, for your sake, I'll ne'er absolve him of.
I wish it not so heavy.
Oh, he must feel it. I never yet gave absolution to any crime of that unmanning nature. It seems then you refused him for defect. Therein you stand not pure from the desire that other women have in ends of marriage. Pardon my boldness if I sift your goodness to the last grain.
I reverence your pains, sir, and must acknowledge custom to enjoy what other women challenge and possess more ruled me than desire, for my desires dwell all in ignorance, and I'll never wish to know that fond way may redeem them thence.
I was never so taken, beset doubly now with her judgment. What a strength it puts forth. I bring work nearer to you. When you've seen a masterpiece of man composed by heaven for a great prince's favour, kingdom's love, so exact envy could not find a place to stick a blot on person or on fame, have you not found ambition swell your wish then and desire stir your blood?
By virtue, never. I only in the dignity of the creature admired the maker's glory.
She's impregnable. A second siege must not fall off so tamely. She's one of those that must be informed to know a daughter's duty, by which some take untaught. Her modesty brings her behindhand much. My old means I must fly to. Yes, 'tis it.
And gives her a book.
Please you, peruse this small tract of obedience. 'Twill help you forward well.
Sir, that's a virtue I've ever thought on with especial reverence.
You will conceive by that my power, your duty.
Enter the white bishop's pawn.
The knowledge will be precious of both, sir.
What makes yon troubler of all Christian waters so near that blessed spring? But that I know her goodness is the rock from whence it issues, unmovable as fate. 'Twould more afflict me than all my sufferings for her, which so long as she holds constant to the house she comes of, the whiteness of the cause, the side, the quality, the sacrifices to her worth and virtue. And though confined in my religious joys, I'd marry her and possess her.
Enter the Black Knight's pawn.
Behold, lady, the two inhuman enemies, the Black Knight's pawn and the White Bishop's, the Gelder and the Gelded.
There's my grief, my hate.
And we're just going to pause there because we've got to the point where... things that sort of hinted at earlier of something happened which I can't talk about in a clear way, finally actually gets explicitly stated, that one castrated the other, and those two figures come in. I'm having, just for the purpose of the room, now that I've listened to everyone read up to this point and having worked through that half of the play already once before, I'm now seeing a route to explicate what's going on clearer. Because what this scene does is it doesn't explain anything at the beginning, and then it drip feeds you data. So that by the time we get to this point, we've sort of figured, you know, we know that the Black Bishop's pawn is a wrong 'un. And we know that the White Bishop's pawn is his mark, and we've got a sense of things, and we slowly get things, but we get these little asides, and they don't come until quite late in the day, that are really quite useful asides, which I kind of wish were in there earlier. So it's almost like actually just slightly moving some of the material around so that it explicates things earlier, not actually having to put in, which is my fear, having to put in additional narration or additional lines to just tweak for the audience, but actually also just bringing in possibly the Gelder and the Gelded in earlier so that we have that little aside slightly earlier. And even if they're not seen by or at least in an audio context sort of thing, so that it all sort of happens more at the same time than unlike, I'm seeing a route through, but I'm just wondering how, for everyone who effectively have read this for the first time, even though some of you have read it before in the distant past, having been clued up as to the vague shape of the relationships, how did that land for you all? How were people feeling? Thoughts in the room? I'll go to Lynn first.
Yeah, this is one where I probably should have looked at it because we didn't know what our parts were going to be. I was finding it just kind of hard to parse the syntax. So the language is actually a challenge in itself as well.
Yeah. It is that thing. The syntax is slippery. You know, it's late Middleton, soon to be literally late Middleton. And as I say, it's structurally quite difficult. You don't get, even though there is an induction and a prologue explaining the basic concept, nobody explains in advance who the White Queen's pawn is. And why anyone's doing anything, and it's really tricky to really get that across. Other thoughts, you know, Helen, did you find you were able to leap into the Black Bishop's pawn relatively straightforwardly?
Yeah, I began to because I have read it once before, but not for about a year. Well, it was a long time anyway. I did remember something about him. I mean, I knew about the gelding business earlier, but he's I couldn't make up my mind whether he should be authoritative or smarmy, because he seems to pass between the two. And I had Lynn's problem as well, because the meaning is the lines are very rarely end stopped. Mm-hmm. You're having to it's quite difficult to sight read.
Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question of tone as to being smarmy and or authoritative, it's both. He's a nasty, creepy character, you know, who switches his approach depending on what he thinks he can get the best result from.
And it's I feel we need that aside, his first aside earlier. I feel that we need him to explicitly say, I am a wrong'un, so that the actor has the option of being utterly sincere when he's talking to him. But if he's utterly sincere beforehand, there's, especially as I say, we're talking initially from an audio level where we don't have any of the visual signifiers in place. We need to signpost really clearly the relationships that are going on here as quickly as possible. Lynn?
Yeah, that was that touches on a question that I had. Do the black chess pieces know that the faith that they are advocating is wrong? Or do they actually sincerely believe that they're right? You kind of have to decide that. Do they know they're seducing someone into heresy, or do they believe they're bringing her into a true faith?
That's a really good question, which I hadn't even considered. I think they are probably true believers, but it's by hook or by crook. You know, as far as they can, so the ends justify the means. I think that's probably right. Because going with the sort of spy crossover narrative, which there's sort of an element of that with this, of, you know, they are infinitely corrupt, but that doesn't mean that, you know, and they're able to twist their religion in all sorts of interesting ways. But that's a really good question. I might be wrong on that point. There's other stuff that will come later on that may or may not inform that. Helen?
Yeah, I think from Middleton's point of view, they're hypocrites. Politically, he would have to believe that they were hypocrites. Not even they could believe it. But on the other hand,
Yeah, so you think that basically the Black Chest Beast, they believe nothing. They're basically secular, they're atheists, but they are, for political reasons, trying to seduce people to the Catholic Church.
I mean, there's an interesting word variation that's available. So the Black Bishop's Pawn, when talking of the other side, the line in the script you've just read, "an heretic well pickled," it's alternatively Puritan. So and there's quite a different spin on the two of those and the way they work as it were. So to a degree, that was just an opening gambit, as it were, to just get you within the world of the play. Now that we've got a few more characters on stage, I want to now go over the second half of the act, and that's primarily what we're here for. So what I actually want to do is just briefly go back to the entrance of the White Bishop's Pawn. We'll stick with the same readers, and we're going to read on till I decide to stop, or we may just read to the end of the act, and get a sense of what happens when we have a few more characters on stage. So the White Bishop's Pawn, he's the one who's been gilded. He doesn't really interact that much with the scene. He's there primarily to do that aside, and then another aside, and then I think he basically exits. But what we get here is the additional black pieces, the Black Knight's Pawn, and later on the Black Knight. And I'll allocate a Black Knight a little later on. And we'll see where it all goes. So if we can go from the enter the White Bishop's Pawn, we will go from, actually, just the White Bishop's Pawns aside. We'll go from there rather than the end. So a bit of literature has been handed to the White Queen's Pawn. It's an opening gambit that the Black Bishop's Pawn's done quite a lot of. Here, would you like some of our literature? Thank you very much. While perusing that, someone enters and does an aside.
What makes yon troubler of all Christian waters so near that blessed spring? But that I know her goodness is the rock from whence it issues, unmovable as fate. 'Twould more afflict me than all my sufferings for her, which so long as she holds constant to the house she comes of, the whiteness of the cause, the side, the quality, are sacrifices to her worth and virtue. And though confined in my religious joys, I'd marry her and possess her.
Enter Black Knight's Pawn.
Behold, lady, the two inhuman enemies, the Black Knight's Pawn and the White Bishop's, the Gelder and the Gelded.
There's my grief, my hate.
What's in the Jesuit's fingers? By this hand, I'll give my part now for a parrot's feather. She never returns virtuous. 'Tis impossible. I'll undertake more wages will be laid upon it. You sure is returned from hell than upon hers from him now. I've been guilty of such base malice that my very conscience shakes the memory of it. And when I look to gather fruit, find nothing but the savin tree, too frequent in nuns' orchards, and there planted by all conjecture to destroy fruit, rather. I'll be resolved now. Most noble virgin.
Ignoble villain. Dare that unhallowed tongue lay hold upon a sound so gracious? What nobleness to thee? Or virgin chastity. They're out of thy acquaintance. Talk of violence that shames creation. Deeds would make night blush. That's company for thee. Hast thou the impudence to court me with a leprosy upon thee, able to infect the walls of a great building?
Son of offence, forbear. Go, set your evil before your eyes, a penitential vesture would better become you, some shirt of hair.
And you a 3-pound smock instead of an alb, an epicene chasuble. This holy felon robs safe and close. I feel a sting that's worse too. White Pawn, hast so much charity to accept a reconciled? Make thine own conditions, for I begin to be extremely burdened.
No truth or peace of that black house protested is to be trusted. I hope of quittance, and warned by diffidence, I may entrap him soonest. I admit, conference.
It's a novelness that fusion cleaved to all my merits.
And exit the white bishop's pawn and the black knight's pawn. And now we have the entrance of the Black Knight. And I'll ask Lynn, could you read the Black Knight, I think, for a little while?
Except for I've lost my place. sorry. Exit White Queen's pawn?
Yes, enter Black Knight.
Oh, no, I'm not far back enough. Oh, my gosh.
It's me okay. Anyway to speak.
So-so.
So
no, I haven't.
Yeah, I know there's a line before it, but that's the general area.
Okay. That treatise will instruct you thoroughly.
So, the business of the universal monarchy goes forward well now, the great college pot. That should be always boiling with the fuel of all intelligence possible through the Christian kingdoms. Is this fellow our prime incendiary and one of those that promised the White Kingdom 7 years since to our Black House? Put a new daughter to him, the great work stands. He minds nor monarchy nor hierarchy, diviner principality. I have bragged less, but have done more than all the conclave of them. Take their assistant fathers in all parts, yea, and their father general in the boot. And what I've done facetiously, with pleasant subtlety and bewitching courtship. Abused all my believers with delight. They took a comfort to be cozened by me. To many a soul, I've let a mortal poison, whose cheeks have cracked with laughter to receive it. I could so roll my pills in sugared syllables and strew such kindly mirth o'er all my mischief. They took their bane in way of recreation, as pleasure steals corruption into youth. He spies me now. I must uphold his reverence, especially in public, though I know Priapus, guardian of the cherry gardens, Bacchus and Venus chit, is not more vicious.
Blessings accumulation keep with you, sir.
Honor's dissimulation be your due, sir.
How deep in duty his observance plunges, his charge must needs be reverend.
I am confessor to this Black Knight too. You see devotion's fruitful. She hath many sons and daughters.
I do this the more to amaze our adversaries, to behold the reverence we give these Wetonians, and to beget a sound opinion of holiness in them and zeal in us, as also to invite the like obedience in the other pupils, or pusils, by our meek example.
And exit the White Queen's pawn. I think we'll pause there. Once again, we've got a scene or a unit of action where I'm going, this would be really helpful if we had this earlier in the scene. It's actually like if the characters who are going to be doing things came on and explicated who they are and how their relationship to other people work at the beginning, rather at this point. It's all backwards. It's really weird. I love all the bits. I just kind of want to put them in a slightly different order. And I'm not quite sure how to do it yet, but I see a possible route. Alan?
A couple of words in there that, of course, is a bit of an issue. Wetones?
Vagrants.
Right. And pusils.
Young women of... Either a virginal situation or the exact opposite, according to the footnotes I've got.
So it's the French word pucelle.
Yeah. I am in fact amending my script for the spelling that's currently in there. Eric,
what's chasuble? Chasuble? Or is that
beyond reverend and the importance of being earnest.
I've seen it, but that did not come up. That handbag.
It's a garment worn during certain celebrations in the church.
Mm.
Church of England has them too.
Mm. It's the vicar's posh frock. Mm. Mm.
And an alb is also a vestment. Mm.
Yeah. Vestment, that's the word.
But you know, there's it's like we've got in the middle of the scene we get this massive speech from the Black Knight, which is good because it's sort of explaining other people and how they are, and other people explain other people. But it's kind of this, it's a really long speech for everyone else to be standing around and it's interesting. I mean, there's putatively in a stage version plenty for the White Queen's pawn to be doing. She could be undergoing instruction from in dumb show, etc., with the Black Bishop's pawn. The description of the Black Bishop's pawn as a Priapus is perhaps it also useful as exposition here, as to what he's like. Thoughts of the room about do people feel more firmly on the ground with where they are now, or are people still confused? How are people feeling?
Well, the hypocrisy element, I mean, the Black Knight sorted that out. Yeah. They're all hypocrites and liars.
Mm.
Yeah. And lecherous with it.
Oh, yeah. And there's going to be a lot more of that. I haven't felt that we need a trigger warning or a content warning for this episode. Later episodes, less so. Spoilers for those who don't know where we're going. Black Bishop's Pawn is going to instigate for the church their usual standby position of having to move him to a different parish due to an unfortunate incident. Nothing changes. So we've got effectively set up, but it's in a very languid way. And I say for audio, I'm definitely thinking we need to maybe move some bits around, so that the people explicating what other people on stage are doing do so earlier, so that it's really clear who everyone is in relation to each other in this. Because otherwise, it's not a scene with lots of people in. It shouldn't be a difficult scene to do. But it's a really weird opening gambit in that sense. Anyone absolutely happy with how it's going and think I should leave it well alone? I've noticed in the chat that some people have had the similar thoughts that we've already had in the previous episode about maybe changing the black pieces to red pieces, because then we can set up a nice opposition of a sort of Cold War situation, because the white pieces are of the White House, so it gives us a lovely accent choices as well, so that we can give everyone different contrasting voices. Because that's the other thing, is making them tonally different as well, so you can instantly recognise who's on what side in an audio context. Alan?
I think also, traditionally, chess sets were white and red rather than white and black. Mm.
It doesn't destroy the scansion, which is also good.
And the thing is that if you do go with the red, you can, of course, use a cardinal's hat for the bishop.
Well, I mean, again, as an audio, that's not really an issue.
No, but the logic would work through.
It automatically gives us different accents for the white pieces can be American/English, we can dance around Russian and Eastern European for everybody else, which could be more problematic or not. I'm not sure, but a nice Cold War aesthetic works rather well, because then we've got fun music to play with, and also all the chess crossover that we've got with grandmasters and things. If this becomes essentially a grandmaster competition, then we have our framing device that works quite nicely. Anyway, any additional thoughts at this time? Otherwise, we will go on to the rest of the text and see where it goes. Because now, in a sense, this is the really straightforward bit of the action. This is the bit of the action I suspect is not going to be too tricky to sort out. Because once the two, uh, the Black Knight and the Black Bishop's Pawn are left alone, I think their relationship is relatively clear. So let us continue then, please. So the white exit, White Queen's Pawn.
So is your trifle vanished?
Trifle, call you her. It's a good pawn, sir. Sure, she's the second pawn in the White House. And to the opening of the game, I hold her.
Aye, you hold well for that. I know your play of old. If there were more queens' pawns, you'd play the game a great deal harder. Now, sir, we're in private, but what for the great work, the main exercise, the hope monarchical?
It goes on in this.
In this? I cannot see it.
You may deny so, a dial's motion, because you cannot see the hand move, or a wind that rents the cedar.
Where stops the current of intelligence? Your father general, Bishop of the Black House, complains for want of work.
Hears from all parts sufficient to employ him. I received a packet from the assistant fathers lately. Look, here's Anglica, this Gallica.
Aye, marry, sir. There's some quick flesh in this.
Germanica.
I think they have sealed this with butter.
This Italica.
They've put their pens the Hebrew way, methinks.
Hispanica here.
Hispanica, blind work this. The Jesuit hath writ this with the juice of lemons, sure. They must be held close to the fires of purgatory ere it can be read.
You would not lose your jest, knight, though it wound your own name.
And enter the White King's Pawn. We'll just pause there and just go. So we've got some practical spying going on here. We haven't heard anything from your agents recently. Where is the information? And we get lots of intelligence coming in. Some letters from your various spies. Maybe some adjustment could be made with some of these lines, because I think we could if we are going with a slightly different context. I think there could be some fun that could be had with this. That the original. I like the invisible ink bit with the lemons. I think that lands quite nicely. Alan.
The thing is that if you change the letter from Italica, you'd lose what's probably been the best gag of the show so far, which is them writing in the Hebrew manner.
Yes, in what way?
In other words, the slanting letters. It's a pun on Italic, isn't it?
Mm.
I thought it was meant it was backwards.
Yeah, and that's actually the point. Is I'm not sure the joke is actually very clear. It's moving in the other direction.
I didn't say it was clear, and I didn't say it was funny. Mm. I just said it was the best gag we've had so far.
Mm. All things being relative.
I think the butter one is quite
good. Oh, yeah, what is that about? Like.
It's the caricature of the Dutch.
It's
because
greasy.
Germany didn't exist at the time. And every other play that we've dealt with of this sort of era, the standard insult to the Dutch is, oh, they're butter eaters.
All we're doing currently is demonstrating that the jokes don't work. The idea of the jokes work, but the jokes are not necessarily actually landing. And as I say, I see that there is room for fun here, in the way that, you know, in any panto, you have a section where you can effectively put in feed gags. I feel that this might be something where topical references. Or little gags like that might work quite nicely. Other thoughts in the room? Otherwise, I felt that sequence is actually really nicely clear as to, you know, what they're sort of doing here. Can we go back to the spying stuff? What are you really here for? Ignore the ignore what you're getting onto there. Where's the data? We need the latest diplomatic pouch to have come in with all the latest material. Okay, we're going to go on with... we're just going to do the last bit of that. We'll do the Black Knight Hispanica blind work this. Into the next bit. The White King's Pawn enters, and I'll ask Emma if you're still there. Emma seems to have disappeared. Uh-oh. I won't ask Emma, because Emma's not there. I will ask Alan, who hasn't had much to say. Can you be the White King's Pawn for the next sequence? Black Knight, Hispanica blind work this, please.
Okay. Hispanica, blind work this. The Jesuit hath writ this with the juice of lemon. Sure, it must be held close to the fire of purgatory ere it can be read.
You would not lose your jest, knight, though it wound your own name.
Enter White King's Pawn.
Curanda pecunia.
Take heed, sir. We are entrapped, the White King's Pawn.
He's made our own man, hath in voto yours. His heart's in the Black House. Leave him to me.
And exit Black Bishop's Pawn.
Most of all friends endeared, preciously special.
You see my outside, but you know my heart, knight. Great difference in the colour. Here's some intelligence. And as more ripens, so your knowledge still shall prove the richer. There shall nothing happen, believe it, to extenuate your cause or to oppress her friends, but I will strive to cross it with my counsel, purse and power. Keep all supplies back, both in means and men, that may raise strength against you. We must part. I dare no longer of this theme discuss. Ear of state is quick, jealous.
Exit White King's Pawn.
Excellent estimation. Thou art valued above the fleet of gold that came short home. Poor Jesuit-ridden soul, how art thou fooled out of thy faith, from thy allegiance drawn? Which way soever thou takest, thou art lost, pawn.
Okay, another element that we might need to do some adaptation on, just simply for people to explicate slightly clearer. Just really emphasizing it's the White King's Pawn. Don't worry, his heart's in the Black House. You know, he's a double agent. And so the White King's Pawn, I feel, should be going, psst, psst, over here, kind of stuff. I like the way that they suddenly, they're in the middle of doing dodgy business and they immediately go, no, there's another chess piece. It might take us if we're caught. Doing this stuff, so it's quite nice. Coranda Pecunia, follow the
money. Look after the money.
Yeah. I wonder whether we might need to just use that in translation, just to make sure that that's absolutely clear.
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
Actually, I'm not sure that's what it means, but it's a good theory.
It's not quite.
No,
but it's pretty close, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I think follow the money is more when you're trailing somebody else's bad things, whereas in this case, keep an eye on the money, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's you know.
Okay. Like, cur is like I was thinking was related to like current, which means to run, but it's more like to curate. It's that.
Yes. Mm.
It's that Latin root. Yeah. To care for.
Look after the money.
Mm. Keep an eye on the money.
Yeah. Look after the money is a better. Yeah, I think that's a better line as well.
Yeah. Eyes on the prize. Yeah.
Well, actually, it's the money must be looked after.
Mm.
Is it? What is the actual Latin? Can't find it there.
Curanda.
Oh, curanda. Yeah. It's. I don't know if that's a gerund or a gerundif, but it's one of the two.
Mm. It's just interesting as to the motivation for the line? Is it on seeing the White King's pawn? In the sense that they're expecting to give the White King's pawn his bribe upon seeing him. I just wonder whether that line would work better within the Black Knight's next speech. He's made our man, our own man, sir.
I don't think so. I think that the curanda pecunia relates to the previous conversation, because I don't think the White King's pawn is spotted till the Black Bishop says, "Take heed, sir."
So what in the previous line is it referring, or lines is it referring to? What's his motivation? Why is he saying this line?
He is contradicting. The Black Bishop is saying, you'll still be making a joke, even though it's harmful to you to do so. And he's saying, God knows.
Well, I kind of have a read on that. But yes, the black bishop's pawn is saying anything for a joke with you. And the black knight responds with, mind your business, basically. I'll make jokes if I want to. Your business is to look after the money. That's as close as I can come to a motivation.
Hmm. Because it does, as far as I can tell, it does seem to definitely follow the entrance of the White King's pawn. I don't think that entrance is misplaced, whereas sometimes in plays we're going, yeah, that entrance is clearly in the wrong place. I'm not sure it is, so I'm not so sure on that one. Whether it's specifically referring to, because if it's referring to they're going to bribe the person who's literally walking in and going, ah, I need to find some cash, then it makes sense actually to fit it in within the logic of you need to pay a bribe. Alan?
Or is there another possibility would be that the White King's pawn is notorious for anything that's not nailed down, he will have. And it's the Black Knight, don't guard your wallets, chaps.
Otherwise, it's just a very, very, it's a very removable line if we don't know why it's there. I mean, that's my issue with it. It's either there for a reason or it's not. And I'm not really sure what its reason for existing is. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just don't know what it's doing.
Yeah, I'm Googling like mad, but all the Google references are so obscure that I can't understand them.
Yes, other search engines are available.
But no, it is. Yeah. Do you have a blue pencil?
I have a blue pen. Oh, we can cut it. It's just if it has a good practical use, I'm happy to keep it. If it does mean we need to pay a bribe to the person who's entering, then it could be utilized in a slightly different fashion or in a slightly different place to make it clear what it means. If it doesn't mean that and it means something else, then probably just cut it. It seems to be in response to the entrance of the White King's pawn. It might be satirical and have a specific reference that we don't understand. In which case, blue pencil time.
Well, apparently, the Latin reference is that the function of the Lord Treasurer was curanda, was to look after the money.
Mm.
And that is how it was in Latin. But whether it's implying that the Black Knight is the treasurer or the Black Bishop's pawn is a treasurer, I don't know. I think it's unlikely.
Okay. I think the scene flows better with enter White King's King's pawn. Take heed, sir. We're entrapped. It's the White King's pawn. I think even on stage, I feel it might be a better way of going for it. though for a full stage production, we are not looking for cuts in an active way, actually, it has to be said. This is not an excessively long play. It's not short, but it's not excessively long. And you could do it happily uncut if you so chose to do so. There's that. Emma, you're back. We lost you.
Sorry, real internet trouble today.
That's all right. What we're going to do is we're going to go back to that halfway point. I just want to run the second half of the scene from the entrance of the White Bishop's pawn and his aside, what makes Yon Troubler of All Christian Waters. I want to run it at pace with the readers we've got, but without any stage directions. So I'm not going to read any stage directions, and we'll see how we go and how it all flows. Take your time to find where you are.
Page 6.
So yes, what top makes Yon Troubler of All Christian Waters?
What makes Yon Troubler of All Christian Waters so near that blessed spring, but that I know her goodness is the rock from whence it issues, unmovable as fate? 'Twould more afflict me than all my sufferings for her, which so long as she holds constant to the house she comes of, the whiteness of the cause, the side, the quality, are sacrifices to her worth and virtue, and though confined in my religious joys, I marry her and possess her.
Behold, lady, the two inhuman enemies, the Black Knight's pawn and the White Bishop's, the Gelder and the Gelded.
There's my grief, my hate.
In the Jesuit's fingers, by this hand I'll give my part now for a parrot's feather. She never returns virtuous. 'Tis impossible. I'll undertake more wages will be laid upon a usurer's return from hell than upon hers from him now. I've been guilty of such base malice that my very conscience shakes at the memory of it, and when I look to gather fruit, I find nothing but in the savagery too frequent in nuns' orchards, and there planted by all conjecture to destroy fruit rather. I'll be resolved now. Most noble virgin.
Ignoble villain. Dare that unhallowed tongue lay hold upon a sound so gracious? What's nobleness to thee, or virgin chastity? They're out of thy acquaintance. Talk of violence that shames creation. Deeds would make knights blush. That's company for thee. Hast thou the impudence to court me with a leprosy upon thee, able to infect the walls of a great building?
Son of offence, forbear! Go, set your evil before your eyes. A penitential vesture would better become you, some shirt of hair.
And you a 3-pound smockstead of an alb, and epicene chasuble. This holy felon robs safe and close. I feel a sting that's worse too. White port has so much charity to accept a reconcilement. Make thine own conditions, for I begin to be extremely burdened.
Truth or peace of that black house protested is to be trusted, but for hope of quittance, and warned by diffidence, I may entrap him soonest. I admit conference.
It's a nobleness that makes confusion cleave to all my merits.
This treatise will instruct you thoroughly.
So, the business of the universal monarchy goes forward well now. The great college pot that should be always boiling with the fuel of all intelligences possible through the Christian kingdoms. Is this fellow our prime incendiary, and one of those that promised the white kingdom 7 years since to our black house? Put a new daughter to him, the great work stands. He minds nor monarchy nor hierarchy, viner principality. I have bragged less, but have done more than all the conclave of them. Take their assistant fathers in all parts. Yea, the father general into boot. And what I've done facetiously, with pleasant subtlety and bewitching courtship. Abused all my believers with delight. They took a comfort to be cozened by me. To many a soul, I've let in mortal poison, whose cheeks have cracked with laughter to receive it. I could so roll my pills in sugared syllables and strew such kindly mirth, or all my mischief. They took their bane in the way of recreation. As pleasure steals corruption into youth, he spies me now. I must uphold his reverence, especially in public, though I know Priapus, guardian of the cherry garden, Bacchus and Venus chit, is not more vicious.
Blessings accumulation keep with you, sir.
Honor's dissimulation be your due, sir.
How deep in duty his observance plunges. His charge must needs be reverend.
I am confessor to this black knight too. You see, devotion's fruitful. She hath many sons and daughters.
I do this the more to amaze our adversaries, to behold the reverence we give these Gwitonins, and to beget sound opinion of holiness in them, and zeal in us, as also to invite the like obedience in other pusils, by our meek example. So, is your trifle vanished?
Trifle, call you her? It's a good pawn, sir. Sure, she's the second pawn in the White House, and to the opening of the game, I hold her.
Aye, you hold well for that. I know your play of old. If there were more queen's pawns, you'd ply the game a great deal harder. Now, sir, we're in private. But what for the great work, the main existence, the hopeful monarchal?
It goes on in this.
In this? I cannot see it.
You may deny so a dial's motion, because you cannot see the hand move, or a wind that rends the cedar.
Where stops the current of intelligence? Your father general, bishop of the Black House, complains for want of work.
Here's from all parts sufficient to employ him. I received a packet from the assistant fathers lately. Look, there is Anglia, Anglica, this Gallica.
Aye, marry, sir, there's some quick flesh in this.
Germanica.
I think they have sealed this with butter.
This Italica.
Oh, they put their pens in the Hebrew way, methinks.
Hispanica here.
Hispanica, blind work this. The Jesuit hath writ this with the juice of lemon. Sure, it must be held close to the fire of purgatory, ere it can be read.
You would not lose your jest, knight, though it wound your own name.
Coranda pecunia.
Take heed, sir, we are entrapped, the White King's pawn.
He's made our own man, half in voto yours. His heart's in the Black House. Leave him to me. Most of all friends endeared, preciously special.
You see my outside, but you know my heart, knight. Great difference in the colour. Here's some intelligence. And as more ripens, so your knowledge still shall prove the richer. There shall nothing happen, believe it, to extenuate your cause, or to oppress her friends, but I will strive to cross it with my counsel, purse, and power, keep all supplies back, both in means and men, that may raise strength against you. We must part. I dare no longer of this theme discuss. The ear of state is quick and jealous.
Excellent estimation. Thou art valued above the fleet of gold that came short home. Poor Jesuit-ridden soul, how thou art fooled out of thy faith, from thy allegiance drawn. Which way soe'er thou talkst, thou art a lost pawn.
And they exit, and that's the end of the act. Lots of interesting things coming out of that, in my mind. There's a really interesting exchange and asides that go on with the White Bishop's pawn. They have the stuff they're saying out loud, and they've got the asides going on, and And we have, and I've got to disappear to the doorbell. People talk in my absence.
Is to take out all the tradecraft stuff and the descriptions of how hypocritical everybody is and stick it at the front.
Mm.
Then bring in the White Queen, the White Queen's pawn, and have her being inducted into Catholicism. And then you can have the White Knight commenting on it, the bits of the White Knight that comment on this, and the advent of the Gelder and the Gelded and all the rest of it can come in the second half of the scene. So you've got more of a setup, a more of a, this is who these people really are.
Yeah, I mean, the whole scene seems to be a bit of arsy-versy, doesn't it? In terms of you're getting various lines that make no sense at all until you get to three pages further on.
Mm.
I just don't quite understand what Middleton was on at the time.
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of interesting questions about how much the audience sort of came pre-prepared, because there's a whole additional layer of satire that's going on here. And the induction that preceded this does have all the various chess pieces come on stage and demonstrate themselves. So there might be something visual that would have helped. But I don't honestly think that there is. For a lot of these relationships, I think there's, I think it's more just simply you sort of would have appreciated that X or Y would have been villains and X and Y would have been goodies, and that the more detailed stuff would creep in. And there's certain things which it's really a question of whether the White Bishop's Pawn's plotline goes anywhere. I know where the Black Knight's Pawn plotline goes. To a degree. I think Eric has a question on that point, unless he asked that when I wasn't in the room.
No, I didn't ask. I was just looking up some stuff because I was wondering also about the hierarchy of these characters, which is an interesting one. But yeah, what I was wondering was if the Black Knight's Pawn is genuinely repentant about this, or sort of just going, I did this and this, and look at me, I'm so bad, aren't I? I'm just a badass. It's hard to tell, but based on the text,
it's a really good question how repentant he is. I think later on he's definitely repentant. That's where the text is going. I think there may be an ambiguity. One of the big problems we've got here is we don't really know why the Black Knight's Pawn did what he did to the White Bishop's Pawn. I don't know even if it's ever explained later on at all. It's just something what happened. And it doesn't really go anywhere, and it's sort of it's really weird in that sense. And I'm sure there are other reasons why it was there, but it's never really fully explained, and there's something slightly unsatisfactory about that.
It's not like the kind of thing that would happen by accident. You know, I got mad and I punched him in the face and I broke his nose. Didn't mean to do that. I mean, you know, it's not like that.
There is a logistical question as to precisely how you managed to castrate this man. Even carrying bladed weapons around a lot, that's quite difficult to do efficiently. What precise degree of castration? There's so many questions to ask. Alan?
I'm just wondering whether, in fact, part of the trope is that the black characters do not feel the need of repentance because they're adherents of the doctrine that once you've confessed and received absolution, then the slate has been wiped clean.
Ah, well, there is a plot point later on with the Black Knight's Pawn, is that actually what he did isn't covered by the various indulgences that are being sold by the Black House. They do go through great detail all the things that you can be absolved of, and the cost, but oddly enough, that's the one thing that isn't covered in their current insurance policy scheme.
Bloody small print.
So yeah, there is a follow up there. I say I don't think the White Bishop's Pawn appears very much in the play at all. I've off the top of my head, I can't remember. I don't recall him appearing very often. Eric, do continue.
No, my other question was basically relating to the hierarchy here, because obviously I'm guessing that the closer you get to the queen and the king, and as in terms of like, you know, what's it called, like in terms of rows of on the chessboard, the higher up they are. Therefore, a bishop would be higher up than a knight. Sort of a tower would be, if there was a tower, I don't know. It would be, you know, lower class than a knight and a bishop, and then you'd get different sort of, I don't know, just the dynamics here are a bit interesting, because the black bishop's pawn goes, oh yeah, I'll tell him off for you, my lady, to the, you know, the queen's pawn, and therefore, yeah, it's just interesting how this dynamic is working as well.
And you know, it is the frustrating thing about this play is after this act, it's relatively straightforward, pretty much, the action. It's only really this act where you know, you've got to open with a bang, and it's drip feeding his information. I mean, I'm currently thinking that actually the major part of the where adaptation comes in is actually the very opening, where in theory we meet all the chess pieces, and in the original would have been a dumb show that actually we have narrators introducing a certain number of these people, and some of this data, some of these speeches come out then. So the Black Knight's big opening speech would be just a few lines within this scene, just to remind the audience who he is, but we'd use that as a sort of opening gambit much earlier on, so that we know who our major figures are. Because it really follows, the Black Knight is a really important character who we will follow a lot in the text, as is the Black Bishop's pawn and the Black Queen's pawn as well. We're meeting most of our major characters in this scene, and it's quite important to lay the basis for them. We have already looked at the prologue and the induction. It doesn't set up what's happening in this scene currently. It just sets up there are some chess pieces. They are engaged in a battle. That's the reason why we haven't done that as well as this, because I wanted to get to the end of the scene and we looked at it last time. So yeah, in terms of the individual relationships, the induction currently does not cover any of this. But I think that's where adaptation comes in and adjustment to the scripts occurs. Any other questions and thoughts about the overall sort of the plot that we've been given? Not that we've been given much plot. There is a wider political plot that's hinted at that they are getting spy data from. But when the play isn't giving us any more as to, you know, there's a hope monarchal. That's it. That's all we've been given. The original audience would have gone, aha, yeah, ah, satire. Whereas nobody today will know that or care. And that's fine, because we don't need to know any more about the Spanish match in real terms. Other thoughts, questions, issues, things that they're confused about, or things an audience might be confused about, or things that we might need to explicate more or tweak around. I'm not finding the absence of names as much of an issue so far as I thought it would. Mainly because the central core characters are actually quite tight at the moment. But they do slip off the edge a bit because they're quite long and complicated.
But we know who they are.
Mm.
But yeah. I think you've got to have some sort of costuming whereby
one
can instantly take the black pieces, tell the black pieces apart from other black pieces.
Well, yes, and in a stage production, that's not a problem. No. I'm talking about the audio realm. What kind of names we can use their full titles occasionally. But, you know, the White Queen's pawn is a bit of a mouthful, and it blurs into the White Bishop's pawn or the White... The moment you have three indicators as to who you're talking about, it's whether we can come up with any nice, neat names for some of the characters so that we can, you know, leap in onto them. The Black Knight we could call Gondomar. That is a name we could apply to the Black Knight, because that's the historical figure. It was. We can't do the same with the white queen's pawn because she has no historical analog. We could give her a name if we want to. And that's the thing, but we have to just give her a name. We just have to make one up.
She's Blanche, because she's white. I don't know. Blanche Dubois.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Agnes.
Agnes?
Beryl. Beryl. That's it.
No. No, 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 no.
Constanza in the chat. Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of
Well, if the black pieces are all given Spanish names.
Mm-hmm. Which would make sense. I mean, in a historical allegory.
And the other English names. But who's going to see these? I mean, they're never used in the text.
Oh, we would add, again, we're talking adaptation here. So, when characters are referring to other characters, that you would add additional mentions of their name. And we do have them doing it already. I mean, they do say, take heed, sir, we're entrapped, the White King's pawn. It's already in the dialogue. The White Queen's pawn says back, you know my heart, knight. And in that context, that's probably enough and that's possibly fine. But they probably have to say each other's names slightly more because that's what you always do in audio drama. Everyone says each other's name in a slightly demented, obsessive way. That's what you do in audio, Helen. That's what that's how we do that.
Yes,
way we know
Robert,
I'm talking
to Helen.
And
I think the accent thing is really necessary. That there's some kind of unified, since you don't have visuals, that everybody on one team talks a certain way and everybody on the other team talks their own distinctive way.
Because then at least we were able to at least 50%, do a 50% split on characters, so you'll at least know what side in theory they're on, apart from the ones who are double crossing and are on both sides or their own side. Eric?
Could it be useful, because obviously for audio you could also have music, so maybe like the black characters could have like their own sort of dramatic music, and then sort of the white characters could have sparkles and I don't know, glittering or whatever, depending on how you want to play it. I mean, yeah, it, obviously if they're both hypocrites it doesn't really matter.
Well, I have to say, if
in different tones,
that going with the Cold War thing, I was definitely thinking the red team, as it were, could have the Tetris thing or something similar. Alan,
I must admit the musical thought was going for me was something like Mozart for the white team, and sort of riffs out of early 70s prog rock for the black team. The link started off with Black Knight, of course.
But yes, I think there are definitely indicators for the general, and just to say, looking for alternative names for some of the characters, just so that we've got a nice shorthand. I mean, the option is that, especially if it gets released episodically, that we've got a narrator figure or narrator's figures that are sort of embedded in the induction. And the idea is at the beginning of each scene, we might recap who's coming on, because we've got chess pieces to move around on the board. So, you can do White Queen's pawn and sound of chess pieces moving. That might be an option. I'm deeply unsure. There's an element of recording an awful lot of material that may not make the edit, is currently what I'm thinking. Any elements of this? Sorry, Eric, go.
I was just going to ask if it's relevant or even helpful to at all, because I don't know. I mean, my brain just goes to like sort of these big chess matches where you've got like e5 or pawn to e5 or something, and you could sort of have that as sort of, imaginary like sort of chessboard as to where everyone is, and then that would explain who and what they're doing. But then I don't know if that helps at all, or it just makes things more complicated.
I don't think, unfortunately, we can construct a plausible game using the pieces and their moves, because if only because some of them cheat and move in ways that they're not officially able to do. But I like that as an overall framing device. I like the idea of talking about them moving from square to square or taking other pieces, because that's what we get later on. We get pieces taken. So there's a sound design element that would match quite nicely with that. So the stage after, of course, doing the full cast audio is looking at a simplified version of the play, probably with, again, narration, but with a small cast. Now, so far, this act doesn't hold any terrors for a small cast because we've only had 7 people come on stage and a couple of them are not very important. So I don't think there's much to discuss adaptationally wise for that. The final point is, of course, for a full production, which I've been stopping everyone talking about so far, but we can now talk about it now, is the importance of costume. We're talking about, you know, we can make everyone look like chess pieces. We can immediately tell you which chess piece they are with costume and silly hats. You know, there's a visual aspect that this immediately tells us what we should be doing with this. Helen, for the listeners at home, is brandishing a hat of a certain hue. So, yeah, there's a lovely visual dimension to this. And all of the problems we've been talking about for an audio dimension totally disappear visually. I still think there's some explicatory problems with this act, but I think most of the problems disappear with just a well-considered production that demonstrates some of the issues that are going on here in advance. I think someone put in the chat, you know, the idea of having a sort of dumb show opening with music of chess pieces moving around, which is sort of inferred by the induction. So, but any thoughts on this act in production? Anything that people would like to see?
It would be nice if you had the luxury of casting smaller actors as your pawns and taller, bigger people as your main piece. I mean, that would be great if you had the enough auditionees to do that. Right. Little short people, your pawns. Tall actors over here.
Big shoes for the king and queen.
Platforms. But yeah, but tall hats can make up a lot of the difference. Yeah.
Well, one of the way you could do it is you could have essentially slightly tiered stage left and right, so that you know they're just physically higher for certain points, because we have I think 2 or 3 scenes where effectively all of the chess pieces are arranged in a sort of diplomatic formation. So that's something, even if it's just occasionally it happens, just once or twice in the play, where all the chess pieces are in chess piece positions and looking chess piecey, that would be quite cool. I mean, we'd have to hire a lot of supernumeraries for this one. You know, we'd have 16 of the primary cast, and then we'd have to hire another 16 to do all the extras. I don't have a problem with that, though. If you're going to go big with this, you've got to go big.
We've also got problem of the bag.
How big is the... This is an Act 5 problem for the listeners at home. All the pieces get put in a bag at the end.
As they're taken.
I think a hell mouth is required. The stage needs to just open up. So we need a hydraulic stage to bring up a bag from the depths. I think that's essential.
And the pieces are not having a happy time in there, because you get sort of when the fat bishop lands on top of everybody else, there's a certain amount of squealing goes on.
And just mentioning the fat bishop, we do have 3 bishops in this play, white, black, and fat. the fourth bishop of the chess set is not mentioned, but in that sense, any character that only has 2 bits to their name is straightforward. You know, black knight, white knight, you know, black bishop, white bishop, fat bishop. You know, you can get that. It's the pawns that are the problem. It's the pawns that are the issue. Alan.
Yeah, I mean coming back to this, the question of the bag, I was just visualizing having a star trap, which you know, most professional stages would have available, you know, and people just disappear below the stage with a drum roll or crash of cymbals or whatever.
But they do need to sort of come back on again. I mean, there's I think the bag needs to rise up so that people can be punching shapes into it, you know, as the fat bishop moves and everyone goes, ah, get off, basically, yeah. For about 5 minutes of that. the bishop doesn't care. He's happy as Larry. I think he farts at some point. I think that gag's in there. I mean, it's very airless in the bag, it should be said. This is all really a discussion for when we get to Act 5. But from small, simple beginnings, this play opens up in fascinating ways. But I say, you've got to not lose your audience in the first 5 minutes, which at the moment the script is sort of doing, and it's sort of middle turn. But I see various routes. I see various options. For the listeners at home, if you have your own thoughts, by all means, get in touch. Let us know. I'm sure some of you are horrified at the idea that not only we might cut lines, but we might add some. I know, isn't it awful? We're monsters. We're utter monsters. But the point of the exercise is, of course, you're not going to get a proper, full, uncut version with no changes unless we do this first. I'm sorry, that's the process. There isn't a large enough market for this unless you're a massive theatre company, which we're not. And we have no ability to influence massive theatre companies because we're just little people. So we do what we can with the things we have at our disposal. Any final thoughts from the room about Act 1, issues, things you liked? We don't have to just be looking for problems. We can always look for things we've enjoyed. Any final thoughts? I'm not going to go around the room individually. Wave at me if you want to throw any thoughts in. There is silence. Helen.
Okay, just to save silence, because I find silence deeply offensive. I think that one of the good things is the history and the politics, but how on earth, I think we have two choices. You either translate the whole thing into something that today's audience actually understands, or you spend an enormous amount of time explaining the context. And I think the second is probably a non-starter. Mm. Because it's quite a business putting people into an early modern frame of mind. So I would say, on the whole, you've got to find a new modern way of looking at this, and certainly the Cold War seems to be favourite at the moment.
Mm. Other options are available. You know, we don't have to be prescriptive, and there are issues with the text and that aren't even always easy to solve. I think you're absolutely right. I think the one of the big problems with Game of Chess is the first thing anyone ever mentions when they talk about it is the Spanish match, and it's a really finickety little bit of historical detail. I mean, it's very important and very interesting things happen, and it was the driving force of the original production. It was full of satirical nods, but they're really difficult to know, even when you know about the Spanish match, what's going on. And you can't be 100% certain if they're actually referring to X or Y at the time either, because satire isn't wholly linear. You don't always absolutely satire one person in one figure, and it may be overlapping into another, and you just drive yourself slightly mad. I think all we can hope for is that we get as much out of it as we can, because, of course, there's a lot of drama that has nothing to do with the satire at all within it. And of course, until we start doing it and find it, you know, for all we know, it'll be terrible. There's no guarantee we're going to do a good adaptation. We could be awful, but at least then we'll have done it and we'll be able to tell people, don't do it that way. It's rubbish. But of course, it could be brilliant and, you know, people could love it. And, you know, it might open up whole new worlds. Any other final thoughts before I close the session? No? Well, we will dive into Act 2 at some point in the future, Act 3 and Act 4 and Act 5. Though in what format or way, there is an element of if the scene basically works, we may skip it because, hey, if it works, it's not really what we're here to try and figure out. We're here at the moment hunting for problems. All that remains to thank all the wonderful readers for all their wonderful reading and for all their wonderful thoughts, those in the room and those lurking in the chat. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.